A Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Hello friends, and welcome to another episode. Today, Dad and I will be talking about symbols, what they are, what we do when they show up in our lives, how do we identify them, how do we interpret them, how do we work with them. We talk about symbols in dreams versus real life, and why symbols are so important in our everyday lives. I hope you enjoy. All right, hello, Dad. Welcome. Another week.
Great. Yes.
Yeah. And for the listeners, we are trying something new. I'm surprising my dad with a topic today. So the weeks before, I've always given him a heads up, and we're trying something new, and we'll see if he likes it or not. Okay, Dad. Well, the topic this week is symbology.
Oh, my.
I know it's a big one. It's a big one. And I am sort of going along this line where we are building a foundation, because I think a lot of people don't know just the foundational parts. And then as we progress in the podcast, we'll be able to talk about things like symbology and archetypes with having a baseline about what we're talking about.
It's true. The concept of symbol is at the base of everything. So important.
I think so as well. Yeah. And I was going to start out like I did last week, where I read the definition of it, and we can see if that lines up with the truth or not. At least
Very
from the
good.
Jungian perspective.
That's right.
Okay. Let me get this on the right desktop. Here we go. So Webster, Merriam-Webster Dictionary, says symbolism is the art or practice of using symbols, especially by investigating things with a symbolic meaning, or by expressing the invisible or intangible by means of visible or sensuous representations. Yeah, it's a lot.
I would say it's a lot of mumbo jumbo that doesn't say anything about yeah. symbol. So yep. I mean, the typical definition, which is not the Jungian definition, but the typical would be a symbol is that which represents something with an image.
With an image, specifically.
Specifically.
Okay. Yeah, their second definition is a system of symbols or representations.
Right. So you're defining symbol as a system of symbols. but it is true. Yes, there are systems of symbols, which we generally call a religion. A religion is a system of symbols. So it's not just each symbol in isolation. Many symbols go together in a system.
Okay. Into a religion. That's interesting. I didn't expect
well, that's what...
that. Well, I guess it makes sense. It gives me something to think about for sure. Yeah, and that goes, my first question is, as far as the Jungian perspective, what is symbology?
So symbology is not exactly a word, and it's not a word that Jungians use. So we would use the word symbol or symbol system. Rather than
system.
Symbology sounds a whole lot like Dan Brown books, in which his character, the lead character, what's his name, is a doctor.
Tom Hanks.
In the movie is a doctor of symbology.
Right.
So obviously that kind of drives me crazy.
I can imagine.
Because I can tell you what they mean by that, which is not what a symbol is or the way that Jung uses symbols at all. But it is the way most people use symbols.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say in Da Vinci Code, the symbol is actually what we would call iconography. You were an art major, also in a bio major, and perhaps you've heard of iconography.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
Okay.
icons, iconography.
Well, so what is iconography? And it is, in the long run, the history of the use of images related to a particular subject. So,
Okay.
a little bit like we talked about last week, there's the iconography of the witch.
Right,
So
which
that if you look,
corresponds kind of to the archetype, but
if you look at art, you will see that there are various common elements in the iconography. That a witch is
okay.
depicted with a broom. I mean, that's a part of the icon. The broom is a part of the iconography. Or the hat is it's a particular kind of hat, and that is typically used in the iconography, or you'll see that in the images.
Interesting. Okay.
And
But that's
the
different than symbology.
right, the iconography doesn't tell us much about the symbol. Symbol of the broom, symbol of the hat. I mean, various aspects of the. But in the Dan Brown novels, that's Dan Brown's gig is actually art history. Like he's an art history professional, and so that's why it's all about various painters and paintings, and of course that's all very interesting. I love art, and it's good to know the history of these images. You know. The way in which the Virgin Mary is portrayed in images has a certain iconography. Like she typically has a blue dress,
She
for
has the
instance.
halo
She
a
has the
lot of
halo. That's a
times.
part of iconography. And again, yes, those are symbols, but the way talking about it this way is not getting at the symbolism.
Okay, so the difference I'm what I'm feeling like is like the difference is between having the meaning behind it. Like you can have an icon without knowing the meaning, but then the symbols have an actual meaning behind them.
Well, maybe.
Okay.
All right. This is where the Jungian thing comes in.
Yes.
So Jung wanted to make a huge differentiation between a symbol and a sign.
Okay, so
So,
like sign as in like I saw a sign, I was given a sign.
or, well, more of a substitute for a known thing.
So like a
So,
stop sign?
is a sign, I mean, that's so, and the technical term is semiotic. It has a one-to-one correspondence. So, for instance, when a person reads a tarot book, it says, this is what the tower means.
One to one, like
Right.
this
So,
is what it means.
that is not a They're not talking about the symbol. They're talking about a
Okay.
one-to-one correspondence. Like, for instance, what does the tower mean in the tower card?
The tower is about sudden and dramatic change from an outside source.
So, see how that's a one-to-one correspondence?
I mean, there's other things and there's other
Right.
symbols in there, but that's like the face value meaning.
Other signs in there,
Other signs in there.
you would say, and or let's say, you know, you get a book about dreams. It's like, you know, I had a dream about a cat, and you read in the book, and it said, when you dream about a cat, it means XYZ.
So one to one, like there's no r wiggle room.
And that's not a symbol. In the Jungian sense, it's a
It's a
sign.
sign. Interesting.
So I always use this example. There used to be, you know, commercials that said, you know, a Cadillac is a symbol of excellence. And the answer is no, it's not.
I see how that could be really confusing,
It's a sign that you're assigning a correspondence to, excellence, that's not a symbol.
It's a sign that you spend a lot of money on a car.
Yes, and part of the whole marketing gig to get you to part with your money. Yes, that's not a symbol.
Okay. Okay. So I think we found a lot about what symbols aren't.
Are not. Then we come
what
to
is a symbol?
The Jungian definition of a symbol. Symbol is a representation of a relatively unknown fact that cannot be represented in any better way.
Oh, man, that raises a lot of questions. So relatively unknown.
Which is, I have a dream of a cat. Okay,
right.
What does the cat symbolize? In the Jungian perspective, relatively unknown.
Relatively unknown.
So that the symbol, and another term that Jung uses and other people use, is an analogy of something, an analog.
Okay.
But it's a sign when you make the analog a one-to-one. It's a symbol when you keep the symbol open, that's the term, when it's not a one-to-one analogy, you know it's an analogy of something. And that's about the most we can say.
Okay, it's getting very mysterious at this point.
It is very, very mysterious if you keep the symbol open, which is why working with dreams is the most wonderful thing in the world, because it opens up an entire world. I had a dream of a cat. How are we gonna, what does it mean? And the answer is, if I start off and say, oh, okay, you had a dream of a cat, and that means something is going on with your feline instinct.
Okay.
Even for a Jungian, which that might be a thing a Jungian would say,
yeah,
that's a sign. That's a relatively.
Okay. It's still too specific.
It's saying that I know what this is in you, your feline instinct.
Okay.
To keep the symbol open, a representation of a relatively unknown fact, I can say, if you have a dream of a cat, it is something like feline energy. Something like. Now we're keeping it open. We're keeping it open. And then the meaning, it's hard to get to an objective meaning, but a subjective meaning is in, what does the symbol of the cat mean to you personally?
Right.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. That we can do something about, because I can have you talk about what a
cat. So it's very individual.
In the first place.
Yeah. So what it means
when
to me.
When we get to the archetypal, that's a different ballgame.
Okay.
And let's say a cat is archetypal.
Right.
But at first, there's the personal level of meaning, the personal level of symbol.
Their relation to their life.
And
as an individual.
Many people would say many different things, right? About a cat.
Right. Yeah.
Some people say,
oh, it's my cat. Oh, I've never had a cat. Oh, I hate cats.
I hate
can see there'd be a world of difference.
I love cats. I hate cats. Yeah. Right. All kinds of, my cat just died. So you'd be very personal. And that's all part of the meaning of the symbol in a
dream. To the individual, though.
Right. And you don't know what the meaning is until you get that level, the personal meaning, because that's part of what it means.
Right. That makes sense.
So like for a symbol to be a symbol, it has to function symbolically to someone in particular. And it's different from person to person. So it's like, that's the first thing. Another thing that Jung would add is, to be a symbol, it has to have power. It has to have energy. If it's totally flat, then it is not functioning as a symbol. For you, it might for somebody else, but for you, if it's flat.
like invoke some kind of emotional response, basically?
Typically, the energy is, yes, what is evoked? That's the best word. When it's evoking something, it's a symbol. So
So if it's just
let's
like,
say
flat, you don't care about it, it's not a symbol.
I dreamed I bought a Cadillac. Okay, what are your associations to Cadillac? And I'm like,
Nothing, right? Just don't care
I
about it.
don't care. I really have you ever? No, I never owned a Cadillac. Like, it's so flat.
Just not a symbol. Just
Personally, right? I mean that
personally, right? Yeah.
it is an analog of something, a relatively unknown fact. Like, there's the analog part, but we don't know what it is. Now we're at the personal level, but that's important for knowing. Meaning, for the most part, is personal,
Personal.
subjective. To think to get to an objective meaning that is universally true in all circumstances, that's a
Then it's not a
stretch.
symbol anymore,
It's a
right?
stretch. Well, you can reduce the symbol to make it a sign and say, if you draw the tower card, it means XYZ. See, there's no personal meaning there. It has completely collapsed the personal meaning.
So like what about when we call like a celebrity like a sex symbol? Does that
Right.
hold up or is that just using the wrong word?
Yeah.
There's
Well, a sign of sexuality.
right. So
Not a
that symbol is just the wrong word there.
sex symbol is, and again, if you dream of we were talking about Matthew McConaughey last time, so like you have
Yes, we were.
I had a dream in which Matthew McConaughey was at a lake, ice lake, fishing out of a Lincoln. Like, what a strange dream. And then you would say, oh, okay, so you dream of Matthew McConaughey, that's a sex symbol. And you see how we don't know.
It could have all sorts of meanings
It
because
could
maybe that person thought of Matthew McConaughey as a father figure and not as a sex symbol.
absolutely. See?
Very individual.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. Well, that leads me into my next question. Now that we sort of have that baseline, is why should people care about symbols?
Because symbols are the bridge between the known and the unknown. Symbols are the bridge between the transcendent world and the phenomenal world. Those are terms from Immanuel Kant, a philosopher in the late 1700s. And the symbol is the bridge that brings something across from the unknown. And it can
Interesting.
be just very psychological. I mean, when we talked about the shadow, like everything is shadow, everything of which you are not aware, is shadow in the beginning. Same thing. Well, how do we know anything about what we can't see?
That's something
All
that by definition doesn't have a definition.
only through the symbol as an analog of something, relatively unknown fact, so that we can't say exactly what is in your unconscious, but at least we have this image that is a representation of something.
So it allows us to sort of ask questions about what's in the sh in the shadow, what about things that we don't
Yes,
know.
all of that, right? And to begin to have not knowledge of what is unknown, but again, an analog.
An awareness even.
And it's the beginning of awareness. Yes, it is.
Because I feel like most people go through life and they think that they know all the things.
They
And then
do.
slowly you find out that you don't know anything. None of us know anything.
So there's a famous line in Kant, and Jung is a Kantian, that says, no knowledge of the transcendent is possible.
Because it's inherently unknowable, right?
And he's a philosopher, so he has to have logical arguments for every single point. It's
Right.
unknowable because of our cognitive machinery. Like the way you think is very strictly defined by the mechanisms of thinking.
Right,
And
by
you
the
would
synapses in our brain.
say human thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what if an idea or a concept or various things are beyond that?
Right.
And
Which I'm sure there are.
which
We're very limited, you
this is
know?
where the symbol comes in, right?
Okay.
But there's that limitation of our machinery. And so, like, think, I mean, every animal has the same thing, right? I mean, the limitations of a cat's cognitive machinery. There are
Yeah,
things
especially
that
with my kitten right now.
there are
Jeez.
things a cat cannot understand.
No. She's just in her like teenage bratty attack years and she doesn't
And she
know
doesn't know that
anything
she's
else.
a teenager, and she
Yeah, she's a
can't
terror.
know. So you see, that's part of it, isn't it, right? But a symbol, a bridge, a cross, as an analogy of something. Before I let go of that, I have this other example that I like a lot that has to do with Carl Sagan.
Yep, I mean, I know who Carl Sagan is, but for
Yes,
the listeners.
he was famous for inventing SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and also the little sign that's on Voyager with the history of humanity in case somebody ever finds it out in space. I mean, he was an amazing person, but he's mostly famous for a TV show back in the 80s called Cosmos.
Oh, right. There's a newer version. I forgot that he did the original one.
He did the original. The newer one was updated because things have happened since
Science.
Sagan did it. But there was one episode in Cosmos where Carl Sagan has a nice illustration of what five dimensions must be like.
Oh,
And he does the
interesting.
illustration by imagining a two-dimensional being, like a
Right.
flat piece of paper, and
Right.
he calls
A cartoon.
those, yes, it's an illustration that's like a cartoon. Yeah, he calls those the flat worlders, and he wants to illustrate, let us say, what a cat, a three-dimensional cat passing through a two-dimensional world would, how it would appear to the flat worlders. You have to think of like the four paws coming down as they pass through the flat world, look like four things in different places. So
Okay, I see that.
think of that as an image, as a symbol, and you're trying to say, well, what does it mean to the flat worlders? And it's like
Okay,
one, two,
yeah.
three, four, and then the tail starts making this other thing over here, and then the body passes through, and then the head last. And how are they going to interpret what they just saw in the flat world? Same way, our cognitive machinery, being three-dimensional, cannot conceive of five-dimensional things passing through a three-dimensional, so
It would
that
just be totally distorted to us.
it distorted and we don't know what it means.
The whole picture, yeah.
So there's the keeping the symbol open, is that this three-dimensional representation of something,
That we
and
don't know what it
all
is.
we have, that's the limitation of our machinery, is the three-dimensional representation.
We have like a paw,
Right.
That's all we have.
In a book, right? I mean, so we say, okay, I had a dream in which, I dreamed of a cat. So there's the analogy, like, well, not a literal cat, but something like a cat, something represented as a cat that is an analogy, a comparison, a comparative to something.
Yeah, it leads me into my next question, which is about how do symbols actually show up in our lives? Is it just in dreams, or can there be a symbol that shows up in our waking life? Like people see they saw a sign, right? Like the cardinal came and sat on my finger. Like, can that be that people's like a symbol, or is it that it symbols strictly dream realm?
I think symbols are all around us, and that's a very good example. In my old book, Living Myth, I have a story about a woman who had an experience with crows in a field.
Oh,
It was
very
deeply,
witchy.
deeply symbolic to her.
Okay.
So you would say the subjective part that we talked about, again, it is an image, a representation that has power, energy,
Right.
and it becomes alive to you. It's not flat.
Okay. So that's what some people are like, oh, this thing happened to me. I'm trying to figure out what it means. That fits under the symbol category.
Right. It does because there's energy there,
Okay.
and
Yeah.
they're
Okay.
invested in it, even though they don't know what it
Okay.
means. Exactly. They know it was important. They know it was important.
So how do we interpret symbols then? Is my next question. If we have this profound experience, we have this thing that happened to us, where have a dream, like a repetitive dream, it keeps happening. How do we interpret these? Do we interpret these? Now that we're talking about this, should we just leave it alone and let it be, or should we try to delve in and figure out what this means? Why do I keep having this dream about a cat? Why do I, every time I go outside, I see crows? Like,
Very good.
how do we interpret that?
Yeah, that's good. Well, the typical way, as we have discussed, is to treat it as a sign, a
Right.
semiotic one-to-one representation. Maybe, I think for most people, that would be flat. Like, again, when somebody draws the tarot card of the tower and you say, oh, this is the tower, it means XYZ.
Right.
Is it powerful? Is to them, does it evoke something,
Interesting.
or do they just like, oh, okay, see what I mean?
It depends on the person
It
and what they're
depends
going through.
on the person, see?
Yeah, some people they're like, oh, they start crying and they like it hits really home for them, and other people it doesn't. They're like, yeah, I don't know.
So that would be somewhat a goal of interpretation, is that it hits home for somebody.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's always the goal with
And then
tarot,
it's
usually when I'm doing readings.
right. And it's, but it's not, each person is different. So it does not hit home with some people.
Yes, every once in a while there's someone. I like to explain it when I'm teaching tarot that I put it like this. Everybody has a filing cabinet of memories and experiences, and the tarot card means what it means, but for each of us as an individual, that tarot card is going to pull a different file out of our filing cabinet. And it's up to us to link what the tarot card means to what it means to us specifically, and how it relates to our lives. And so I feel like that's very sim the symbology is very similar to that, because you're getting into that same thing with the individual.
Exactly. I mean, that would be one way. What is the meaning of a dream? That's why we have to have the personal associations,
Right.
which are the filing cabinet. I mean, that's
Yeah,
fine.
exactly.
When you start to interpret a symbol, a good place to go is first to the personal
Right.
and say, what does this evoke in me? Oh, well, I remember
Exactly.
this time that XYZ happened, and then all the emotion comes flooding back of that experience, and now that is associated with this image.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
And then the interpretation is actually taking an image and helping a person relate to that image.
Right.
It's
So, and that's what you do with dreams,
and that's what we
right?
do with dreams. It's like, everybody says, I have crazy dreams. I don't know what they mean. And they're not relating to the image.
Yeah, that's.
I dreamed of a cat. So what? I mean, there's no relating there.
Exactly.
The first job of interpretation is to create a way of relating.
Exactly.
And
Yeah.
it might be personal. We have to get a little bit to the archetypal, but it's still the same principle of relating to it. We come back to Jung.
Yeah.
We don't know what it means objectively because of the three-dimensional plane we're stuck on, kind of
Stuck on,
thing.
yeah.
But like an image, archetypal cat, let's say, we know the history of that image and how it has been used in various contexts.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Now, none of those may have any personal connection, and it could still be flat for you. So
Yeah.
I could say one aspect of the history of image of cat is the Egyptian god Sekhmet,
Right.
which is
Okay. I didn't think about it that way.
represented as a cat.
A cat, right.
And in the history of the image, Sekhmet is represented as being associated with the passage to death, let us say.
Okay.
Not to mention a black cat,
Well, black, yeah, I was thinking about the color of the cat might be
which is
interesting.
also associated with death historically. See, now
Yeah.
if we make it one to one, if you dream of a black cat, oh, that's a very bad dream.
Or, we have the superstition a black cat crosses your path, you're going to have bad luck.
That's right. And again, now that's historical. I mean, that is
Right.
historically
But then
true.
the individual, yeah,
Right.
like my best friend has black cats, so she loves black cats.
I have
So
black cats and I love
you have
black
black
cats.
cats, yeah.
And so that's not what it means to me. And when you talk about the history of an image, it's always multiple streams, not just one. See, this is how we keep the image
Yeah.
open. It's like, okay, there's that Sekhmet vector that's there. Cats, black cats. Okay, there's that. Another vector with cats is what I mentioned earlier, this thing about feline energy.
Yeah.
So, catness,
Katniss.
which is, see, then you just have to go to the universal
Deep down.
experience of
Yeah.
cats and human beings is that, well,
Aloofness, doing whatever they want. They're the witches familiar, quote unquote, that
they
so
are.
they tend to be a bit spooky. And is it a tabby cat? Is it an outdoor cat? Is it an indoor cat? Is it a shaggy cat? I
And
mean,
then
I feel
when,
like there could be an endless amount of
well,
associations with
there
it.
are. And there.
Because there's unlimited human and potential, right?
So, in interpreting it, I mean, there's a way in which all of that needs to come in so that we don't close down the symbol. And then the person may connect with one of those streams.
Yeah, exactly.
Personally, like connect with
Personally.
that
Yeah.
stream
Yeah,
and
and I get that too with tarot too. There's a lot of cards have a variety of like vibes. I have certain meanings for cards that I know that other tarot readers probably don't have the same one as me because I have a having a young analyst as a dad have a slightly different relationship with symbols than other people do. But there'll be times when there's one card in particular, the Five of Swords, that is a little bit ambiguous. And I start out by asking the person which figure in the card they relate to.
Oh boy.
There's a person who's like sneakily taking swords, and there's somebody who's like has their back off staring at the sky, and there's somebody who's like crying. I'm like, so which one are you in this situation? And it tells me a lot about how they're relating to the card. I think the
That's
relating aspect is very important.
Right. So that's what makes it the symbol, right? And then you right, in the interpretation, you're looking, I call it for what's hot for this person. What
What's hot?
aspect of the image has energy, has power, it evokes
Evokes
some.
response. Yeah, that
And
makes a lot of
so
sense.
you're right that a part of dream interpretation is, a dream will have many, many images, and then I will ask someone, it's like, what part of this dream speaks to you?
Exactly. Because
And
that's going to be the important part.
we can start with that. Like if everything else is flat, then I could spend all day and it stays flat, and
Right.
that's not helpful. I'm looking for what's hot.
Exactly.
And
I like that term.
just ask them, and pretty much people will tell you.
Okay.
There is one more aspect, though, and that is Kant. You remember we were talking about Immanuel Kant, KANT, talked about having taste, a certain sensibility,
Interesting.
which for Kant actually has to be refined, educated. It's not natural in his very specific way of using this word, taste.
Taste.
So let's say that, it takes some work to have a taste for fine wine,
Okay, sure. Yeah.
right? You have to have some experience. You have to be able to evaluate one taste of one kind of wine versus the other taste of another kind of wine,
Sure, yes.
or a taste for fine food, too. Let's say you're not born with
Sure.
it. You're not born with it. It has to be developed and educated.
Right.
So
That makes sense.
Kant would say it's the same thing for symbols, that or you it is possible to develop a taste for symbols.
Okay. So it's like when you're not looking for it, it's not there, but when you're looking for it, it's there.
I think it's like taste. When you have the feel for it, the feel for it, we call that the sense of the image. There's
Okay.
sort of the basic sense of an image, but it's taste that once developed, though, then more things become alive in the symbol to you, have evoke a
Right.
response.
So it's
Let's say I've had a person have a dream, an incredible dream of essentially the anima in her goddess form walking down a ramp.
Ooh. Sounds nice.
It's very nice. What a lovely,
Yeah.
beautiful, sublime dream.
Right?
And for this person, it was totally flat.
Oh, really?
Right. The person
Oh.
could not relate at all to the image of the goddess. Like no emotional response.
Wow. Being really tuned out.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you see how there has
Wow.
to be a sense of taste developed.
Yeah, I can understand with your wine thing too. Like, if you're not a wine connoisseur, you're not going to know the difference between a box of $20 box of wine and a $200 bottle of wine. To you, it's going
Exactly.
to taste the same.
Right.
Right.
Because you
Then once you
had
have experience and you
experience,
know about it,
context, you could
context.
put the image in context. It's developing a sense of taste. And so
Interesting.
that's a bit more advanced,
Okay.
but the goal is still to find what is evoked.
Right. So, and then on that line, how do people develop their taste then? How do they get to know more about it so that they can be more open to receiving and looking at symbols and feeling
Right.
more things that light them up?
So let's say last time we talked about the book Man and His Symbols. That's an introduction to many, many symbols and
Okay.
the history, that lies behind, because that's learning and education. I mean, you can learn about Egyptian religion and
Right.
who Sekhmet is, and oh, this is the iconography of Sekhmet.
Right. Okay.
That develops it, right?
So just learning more about the different
And
possibilities
there's a
and
great, I mean, you need books. It's because there's everything is symbols. I mean, it's everywhere. There's
yeah, right.
so much to learn and so much to study. And again, that's a little bit why the professional analyst, of course, has a very long education in the history of images.
That's right. I know you teach classes on it too, so for other Jungian analysts. Yeah, do you have any other books besides that one?
Joseph Campbell's pretty good.
Okay. And that was
So
the one that was the Hero of a Thousand Faces, or is there another one?
he Hero of a Thousand Faces, for the more, if you're really, really into it, he has a four book series on mythology.
Okay.
That's called,
We can just put it in the show notes too if you can't think
well,
about it
that's
right
right.
now.
So
We'll put a link.
one book is on primitive mythology, one book is on Western mythology, one book is on Eastern mythology, and the final book is on modern mythology. So that's fascinating. And you will be exposed to many, many symbol systems by reading Campbell. And I mean, it's all fascinating. From, you know, he Native American to, like we talked about last time, Japanese, Shinto, I mean, all over, Aboriginal in Australia, all over the world, these symbol systems. So that when you have a dream, it is amazing how the form of that particular image then resonates with, has a similarity or an analogy to other forms all over the world. And maybe that helps you, that evokes something.
Having more context, just like the wine. The more context you have, the more you'll be able to appreciate the different things that come up. I really like that. Let me just check my questions here. I think we've gone through pretty much all of these in one way or another. Did you have anything else that you can think of off the top of your head that's really vital for people for a baseline of understanding symbols and symbology?
I think I would just finish with talking a little bit about how important it is. Because the modern world, post-industrial world in which we live in, the culture is flat, which is one reason why we have to develop our taste, because if we just go with the culture, it's like, name a meaningful symbols in the culture on YouTube, on
Oh,
TikTok, on,
geez.
you see how flat it is?
Very surface level,
And then maybe for many people, that's all they know.
And how very two-dimensional.
And limiting, and you're missing out on so much. And let's say something like the Marvel movies, who are bringing in Norse mythology, Greek mythology, and I think it's still flat the way they do it. Like, they're using the old forms, but a symbol can die, Jung said, a dead symbol.
That's interesting.
So
We didn't talk
that
about that.
versus a living symbol. So, yeah, Loki in the
Loki.
Marvel movies, right? You know, is an image from Norse mythology.
Trickster God.
Yes. If you don't feel the energy, then it's a dead symbol. So a real symbol is a living thing. So Jung said it's like
Interesting.
a snail. is that
Okay.
yes, you find the shells.
But they're not.
What remains is the
Yeah.
image remains from a long time ago. But
Okay.
the living creature is gone.
Huh.
The shell is not a snail.
Interesting.
Right?
I feel like, did you watch the Loki series though? Because that was really good.
Okay. No,
I
I have not because
think
these things bug me.
you would actually like it because the way that it ends up is pretty crazy. Yeah. But I do like your analogy with that because I don't think there's a lot of people that would feel like they're being evoked by the symbology of Loki in that. I don't know if it would be
And you would say,
lighting up a lot of people.
in this culture, that it's entertainment. I mean, that's its whole
Yeah, oh
purpose.
well. It's 100%. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that is not evoking meaning. It's just an entertainment. Now, films are very special, and some films do evoke. And now
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Totoro.
Oh, I love Totoro.
I love Totoro too.
Yeah.
Because it is evocative.
Yeah, I think it's evocative about a lot of things.
It is. It's working.
Childhood
Well,
and
yes, it is working with a symbol system, as in that is Shinto.
Right. Yeah.
And Shinto has the inherent idea of the kami, Kami. So,
Oh,
like
yeah.
animism, it's like there is the spirit in different things and in different places that make them sacred, that
Right.
make them very special.
Exactly. Like the tree spirits
The
and
tree spirits, like Totoro.
Totoro.
So you would say, well, is that a dead symbol or a living symbol? Because yes, it's
Oh.
Shinto. Shinto is very old. Well, this filmmaker, I mean, for me personally, it is quite evocative. And the Totoro tree, and it is
Yeah.
highly evocative.
Well,
So it
Miyazaki is known for being the Miyazaki, the creator, is known for
yes.
being. I mean, that he also did Princess Mononoke, which we talk about spirits of the forest and all that. Big one.
So there you go. See, now it's a living symbol when he does it
Interesting.
in film that way.
Right. Interesting.
So there you go.
Dead symbol versus living symbol. Wow. And that's interesting that your book is called Living Myth. I'm guessing that's not a coincidence.
That's not because it's compared to a
Right,
dead myth.
exactly.
And how does a
It makes
person
sense.
find the living myth?
Ugh, that's
But
tough.
it has to be personal. I mean,
Right.
it happens in you, right?
But I mean, and so individuals can bring symbols back to life then. Is that a way that we can do that? Like if someone really wanted to, if Loki, they watched Loki and then they started having dreams about Loki and they started meeting people that seemed like they were very trickstery, is that the symbol coming back? Or is that like for them individually, or
Good.
does it have to be on a collective level?
Technically, Jung also says only the unconscious can create a symbol, not the ego.
Okay.
So
Interesting.
it's coming back if the unconscious takes that image and now imbues it with power and energy.
Right.
You, the ego, can't. I'm going to decide now to
I'm
have the
gonna dream
god,
about this thing. Yeah.
have the god Loki in my life. See, that's crazy. I mean, that's. But it's also people do it, but they're pretending.
Oh, interesting.
You're pretending because you're trying to force it with your ego. Only the unconscious can create a symbol. What you can do is develop the taste. So when something crosses the bridge,
Right.
You can't make it cross the bridge.
Right,
You really can't.
right.
If you have a sense of taste, you will feel it when that happens.
Okay.
And then it's alive.
Yeah, well, I think that happens a lot in the witch community because a lot of witches work with different deities and things like that. And I'm sure there is a witch out there that says they work with Loki. So I'm interested. It's I know it's very, very personal,
Right.
but saying that a symbol is
Archangels.
dead
Lots
or
of people.
archangels, there's people that work with our yeah, there's a lot. One of my people that I really look up to is named Tess Weiss Whitehurst. Tess Whitehurst, and she works with angels and archangels. So, which I find very interesting, as it's just an energy and multidimensional being. But
And you see that, okay, it is a symbol, angels, archangels, from a symbol system.
Right, exactly.
Old, and
Yeah.
then is it dead? Are those just the shells that are left? Or does it come alive in you?
So it's kind of impossible then to know if a symbol is alive or dead because it's so individual.
Yes. You know it's alive in you. Again, if you have the taste even
Right.
to feel it in yourself, it's like something is being evoked in me.
Right.
And then somewhat in the culture, sometimes it is so evocative that many people flock to
Right.
it and then are even possessed.
Possessed. How
That
do you get
is,
possessed by a symbol system?
you get possessed by this energy and power that is so
Hmm.
compelling, engaging, that you can't resist. I mean, again, the ego cannot stop what is evoked from this.
So like a nun or a monk or something like that would be like somebody that was overtaken by a
No, let us, I mean, in a very negative context, like a mass psychosis.
okay.
It's not good to be possessed, let us
Okay, it's
say.
not good to be. You don't want to be completely overtaken by those.
Look at Nazism. Okay, it's
Oh, well, yeah. Okay.
full of symbols,
Right, definitely.
resurrected from Norse mythology, and yet you look at a Nazi rally. And those people are in a group mind
Yeah. Interesting.
as the symbols are paraded around and the music, and it's
Yeah, group psychosis. Interesting.
so that's those symbols were resurrected. At least German people reacted from their Norse heritage to
Right.
those images, and then propaganda would be that Joseph Goebbels knew how to manipulate that in people.
Right.
And of course, manipulating people with symbols is
Goes
possible.
back a long time, I'm sure.
So that's one example of
Wow.
an old
Okay.
symbol becoming alive again.
Live.
On the other hand, you can also have a very powerful experience of wholeness or blessing. That
Oh, well,
is again,
that's, I would hope so. You know?
that is not just individual, but a group, collective.
Okay.
So, for instance, in the Catholic tradition, there's this thing called the apparitions of Mary.
Oh.
And if you've ever heard of Fatima and the pilgrimage to Fatima, and
Oh, yeah.
Medjugorje is,
Right.
these are places where an image of
Okay, Mary.
the
Yeah.
iconography of the Virgin Mary appeared in the sky, typically in the woods, and multiple people experienced it, saw it,
So
as
they all
in
saw the vision at the
hundreds,
same time?
hundreds, yes,
Oh,
hundreds.
wow.
And yes, and typically in that the symbol system in that kind of experience is in the Catholic tradition is that also individual children have a special conversation that the others don't.
A special
So,
conversation with Mary?
yes.
Oh.
And those are called the secrets of Fatima,
I
which
didn't know that.
the children were taken to Rome and they were written down and given to the Pope and locked away in the Vatican vaults,
Really?
what the children were told.
Talk to Mary about?
So
Interesting.
speaking of the mystery and everything,
Huh.
and so you'd have to say apparitions are not just a Christian phenomenon. It's sort of in
Oh,
every
well.
in every mythological tradition, there are stories about apparitions that are, right, holy, sacred, blessing. So that's a collective experience of a symbol coming alive.
Interesting. Well, my last question on here that I think we've touched on, but I just want to make sure, is about Jung's perspective and why are symbols just so important to Jung? Like, how did that come about?
Pretty much what you said earlier. You know how the unknown is unknown?
Well, yeah.
And in one of the films, Jung says that's the problem with the unconscious is that it is really unconscious. And how can you
Yeah.
study the unknown? Because there's nothing to study.
Right. Because it's inherently unknown.
All we have to study are the symbols.
Right. The
That's
paw
that's
prints.
the
Yeah.
research. That's the research.
Okay.
And even though we don't
Okay.
know what it is exactly, we can collect many, many samples from all over the world
Okay.
and say, maybe these paw prints are like a cat. If we have enough,
Right.
like, 100 images,
Slices.
100
Yeah,
images.
exactly. You put them all together.
And so that is the research to have some idea of what is in the unknown.
Well, thanks, Dad. That gave me a lot to think about. I think it will give a lot to our listeners to think about as well. And I think it gives us a really good base for symbology, which I'm sure is something that we will end up talking about a lot. And I don't have a topic yet for next week, but we'll
Hey,
decide if I give it to you ahead of time or not this time.
let's just talk. Spring it on me. It's fine.
Okay, cool. You got
All right.
it. All right. Well, thanks again, Dad.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed our discussion on symbols. And if you want more of me, Molly, you can head to my website, queenofcupsapothecary.com. If you want more about my dad, you could head to History of Ideas on YouTube. If you have any questions, always feel free to reach out at ajungianinawitch@gmail.com. And if you're in the New England area, next Monday, April 8th, we will be celebrating the eclipse. I'm throwing an eclipse party, so come out and hang out and enjoy that one-of-a-kind event with us in Peabody, Mass. Will be at Granite Coast Brewery. More info on that in the experiences section of my website. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.